Have you ever socialized with Donald Trump in the presence of females under the age of 18?
Excellent question, counselor. Wonder what the answer will be.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. All right, there have been a few new developments since we last spoke with you on this program in Donald Trump's collapsing world, at least regarding his gloriously failed so far cover-up of the Epstein files, his involvement in them, including confirmation, in case you needed any, that yes, he is in fact named in them, quote, multiple times and has known about that since at least May.
What?
Of this year. We'll get to that and other related red meat developments shortly, but given the white-hot spotlight for the moment on that and other Trump-related news that he is hoping to distract you with, I do want to make sure that at least someone gets this news out. And if not us, I would ask, then whom? Desi Doyen covers this a little bit. Of course, in our latest Green News report coming up later this hour. Hi, Desi.
Hi.
After the story initially broke on Wednesday, to seemingly little notice elsewhere, at least in the U.S. news media, but we're only able to hit it for a minute or two at best in our six-minute GNR. And I think this is kind of landmark news that really needs a bit more coverage, a bit more light today before it becomes buried entirely. So allow me to start here via Reuters. The United Nations High Court on Wednesday told wealthy countries that they must comply with their international commitments to curb pollution or risk having to pay compensation, reparations, in fact, to nations that are hard hit by climate change. In an opinion hailed by small island states and environmental groups as an important legal stepping stone toward holding big polluters accountable, the International Court of Justice, also known as the World Court, said countries must address the, quote, urgent and existential threat of climate change. They must address it. Quote, states must cooperate to achieve concrete emission reduction targets, said Judge Yuji Iwasawa, reading his ruling from the bench for emphasis on behalf of the 15 World Court justices. He spent 2 hours doing so, in fact. He added that failure by countries to comply with the stringent obligations placed on them by climate treaties to curb greenhouse gases, or GHGs, was a breach of international law. The court said countries were also responsible for the actions of companies under their jurisdiction or control. Failure to rein in fossil fuel production and subsidies could result in, quote, full reparations to injured states in the form of restitution, compensation, and satisfaction, provided that the general conditions of the law of state responsibility are met. Here are some of Judge Iwasawa's comments from the World Court from the bench on Wednesday.
The court notes that the consequences of climate change are severe and far-reaching. They affect both natural ecosystems and human populations. These consequences underscore the urgent and existential threat posed by climate change. The court considers that the material scope of its inquiry encompasses the full range of human activities that contribute to climate change as a result of the emission of GHGs, including both consumption and production activities. GHG emissions are unequivocally caused by human activities which are not territorially limited. States must cooperate to achieve concrete emission reduction targets. The court considers that the climate change treaties establish stringent obligations upon states to ensure the protection of the climate system. Failure of a state to take appropriate action to protect the climate system from GHG emissions may constitute an internationally wrongful act, which is attributable to that state.
That was Justice Yuji Iwasawa of the World Court on Wednesday. Quote, "I didn't expect it to be this good," said Vanuatu's climate minister to reporters after the unanimous opinion by the ICJ after it was read out. Vanuatu is a tiny island nation in the South Pacific. It has been, frankly, punching way above its own weight on this issue, it seems to me, for some time. But in one sense, they have to. It seems like they have no choice. It's not just an existential concern for them, as it is for all of us at this point. For them, it's an immediate existential threat as they face a sort of a convergence of climate-driven threats.
Yes.
That are reshaping the environment, the economy, the way of life there, including some impacts that are already irreversible. Vanuatu right now is facing faster than global average sea level rise of about a quarter of an inch per year.
It doesn't sound like much, but it actually is a huge difference over the long term.
Well, it actually does sound like a lot if you know anything about this science, because Donald Trump will tell you, oh, it might raise an eighth of an inch in 100 years. No, it's actually a quarter of an inch every year now for places like Vanuatu, and it results in coastal erosion, saltwater intrusion into the drinking water. Along with flooded homes, gardens, grave sites, etc. They have seen multiple Category 4 cyclones, 4+, it's described, in recent years, including three in 2023 alone for Vanuatu. Their coral reefs are now collapsing and have turned into graveyards at this point, with some coastal communities now actually considering full relocation inland. Something that I think is going to become more and more common in such places. And yes, such places will even include places like the U.S., where we have tons of coastal communities that are now endangered by the continuing burning of fossil fuels, causing a rise in the seas, despite the fact that clean, renewable energy sources, as new reports also in DESE's GNR a little bit later will emphasize, those renewable sources are now cheaper than the dirty, expensive, and yes, deadly fossil fuels that Donald Trump is now ramping up instead of down, as Joe Biden had been doing. Wednesday's opinion follows 2 weeks of hearings last December at the ICJ, when the judges were asked by the UN General Assembly to consider two questions. What are countries' obligations under international law to protect the climate from greenhouse gas emissions? And what are the legal consequences for countries that harm the climate system? Those are two good questions. Developing nations and small island states at greatest risk from rising sea levels had sought clarification from the court after the failure so far of the 2015 Paris Agreement to curb the growth of global greenhouse gas emissions. Vishal Prasad, one of the law students that lobbied the government of Vanuatu to bring the case to the ICJ, said, quote, "This advisory opinion is a tool for climate justice, and boy, has the ICJ given us a strong tool to carry on the fight for climate justice." Also noting,
6 years ago, young people from the Pacific decided to take climate change to the world's highest court. and today the ICJ has responded. In no uncertain terms, it has told the world that climate impunity is no longer allowed.
Well, we'll see. Desiree, you've been covering this matter via our Green News reports now for some time as the case was moving forward. I know you've been looking into how this case came to the World Court in the first place.
Yes. So 6 years ago, as V. Vishal Prasad mentioned, a group of law students in the South Pacific came up with the idea with their law professor to take the issue of climate change to the UN International Court of Justice. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up taking that idea to small island state governments, you know, the ones that are grappling right now with the existential threat of climate change.
Yeah, well, some of these that may literally be, you know, end up underwater.
Oh, they will.
Disappear entirely.
Yes, it's just right now probably a matter of how fast. But anyway, so those island nation state of Vanuatu signed on to back them. Vanuatu secured backing from donors and hired a law mm-hmm. firm and spent years drumming up diplomatic support. Now, the court case was argued back in December. We covered it back then in the Green News Report. The court case exposed the divide between heavily emitting industrialized countries that, you know, have profited from using fossil fuels and polluting the planet. Versus...
Anyone in particular you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. Just want to mention that the United States, before we forget to move on, the United States is the world's number one historical emitter, far beyond anything China is doing now. So, yes, we're kind of all talking about the United States here. So, anyway, during about 2 weeks of testimony in December, the country's on the rich side, remember, this is exposing the divide between rich nations and developing nations that are now bearing the direct consequences and having to pay the cost that is, you know, mounting yearly on trying to repair their infrastructure and, you know, where are they going to get drinking water from saltwater intrusion and all of that. During the oral arguments, countries including the United States, China, and Saudi Arabia basically argued for maintaining the status quo. They said that the current international system with the UN annual climate negotiations, that's sufficient
for dealing with climate change. It's working great. Yeah. It's working great. Why should we change?
And
it ain't broke, don't fix it.
And the small island nation states told the court that the system is failing them because it is, and that this court case was their last-ditch effort. So Antigua and Barbuda Prime Minister Gaston Browne told the court, quote, "This is not just a legal question. It is a matter of survival."
Yeah. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he hailed the opinion from the court, said it affirms the Paris Climate Agreement goal needs to be the basis of all climate policy. He said, quote, "This is a victory for our planet, for climate justice, for the power of young people to make a difference," he said. "The world must respond."
Now, it's important to note going forward that this is a non-binding ruling, and it won't force any immediate policy changes. But it will more widely open the door to climate cases around the world, giving some leverage to people who are trying to hold polluters, corporations, and high-polluting nations to account. Activist groups can now bring lawsuits that they against their own countries. Mm-hmm. It will help them with that in failing to comply with the pledges to act on climate change. The senior attorney for the Center for International Environmental Law, Erica Lennon, said that the ruling can also be used as leverage at the next UN climate conference later this year in Brazil.
So there are a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of fallout in the months and years ahead from this ruling.
Yes.
The rich industrialized countries are going to be held accountable for because they have had the most emissions. Judge Iwasawa said these countries had to take the lead in addressing this problem. Well, we're trying to, Judge. Now China is doing so. And frankly, they are blowing the wheels off the U.S. and the rest of the world in that regard in the bargain. We were trying to. Donald Trump has undermined so much. He's undoing all of the climate regulations that were put in place and the incentives for clean, renewable energy that were put in place by Joe Biden. So we ain't doing that much anymore, at least not the government itself. China is, and like I said, they're blowing the wheels off the U.S. They are, and they're going to make a mint in doing so because they're taking climate change seriously while we are living under a fossil fuel-funded denialist regime.
Yeah. Trump has basically handed China the 21st century global leader as the global leader for the, you know, the technologies of the future.
Yep. It is insane. And, you know, he may not be alive much longer to see the damage that it is going to cause, that it is causing right now. But a lot of us will, hopefully. The UN says that current climate policies, if we continue on the same course that we are currently on, will result in global warming of more than 3 degrees centigrade, or almost 5.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That is twice as much as allowable via the Paris Climate Agreement, which is supposed to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. So, you know, this is going to get worse. We are going to need to do something about it eventually, whether the fossil fuel industry wants us to or not. I would suggest the smart countries will do so now. Reuters notes that as campaigners seek to hold companies and governments to account, climate-related litigation has intensified with nearly 3,000 cases now filed across almost 60 countries. That, according to figures from London's Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change and the Environment. So Wednesday's ruling from the World Court is certainly going to play a big part in those 3,000 cases moving forward. Hopefully it'll make it more difficult for the fossil fuel industry and its deadly defenders to be able to support their unsustainable, life-threatening positions, that we should, you know, simply continue to make things worse and worse and worse so that that industry can make more and more money. And I suspect there are a few million folks across the country today who are sweltering in record summer heat and humidity, who may be hoping for that as well, as they continue to learn who and what is to blame for our ever worsening climate chaos. More on all of that in our Green News report later this hour. But in the meantime, the petty little tyrant who is unlikely to, as I said, live long enough to see the worst of the devastation that he will have helped to cause in gutting clean, renewable energy initiatives in this country, that petty little tyrant is already abusing his power to punish those who, well, are already paying the price of climate chaos. The White House on Wednesday denied Democratic Governor Wes Moore's request for almost $16 million in disaster relief funds from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, to pay for repairs after heavy floods swept through Western Maryland in May. Now, $16 million might sound like a lot to you and me. It is an absolute drop in the bucket, a grain of sand in the federal government budget, but even that was denied. Now, remember when Donald Trump lied to you last year and told you that Joe Biden was withholding, it was outrageous, withholding federal disaster assistance from people in Western North Carolina after Hurricane Helene? Remember that? And that Biden was doing it at the time for political reasons? Well, as it turns out, none of that was true. He was not withholding those funds. It was not for political reasons because he wasn't withholding the funds. None of it. None of it was true. Nonetheless, that is exactly what Donald Trump now seems to be doing to flood victims in Maryland. From May 12 to May 14, extreme rainfall caused water to rise to a historic 12.5 feet in George's Creek in Maryland, which spilled over and forced evacuations in Allegheny and Garrett counties. School children were ferried to safety by boat. The floods damaged more than 200 homes, as well as numerous businesses, roads, bridges, railroads, sewer systems, drinking water systems, public utilities in several Western Maryland towns. Maryland's need met the federal threshold for emergency disaster funds, the ones that typically trigger public assistance from FEMA. That according to the governor, Governor Moore. Still, the state's request for aid was denied. As Governor Moore said in a statement responding to Trump's denial, quote, these communities demonstrated a clear need through FEMA's own process, and Maryland will appeal the decision to seek all available resources to support the recovery efforts. A letter from a senior FEMA official said the agency, quote, determined that supplemental federal assistance under the Stafford Act is not warranted. The letter, however, did not further explain their decision or the process that officials had used to deny that funding. The rejection of Moore's request for federal aid came a day after, as it turns out, just one day after President Donald Trump announced that he was granting requests for disaster relief from several other states, including West Virginia and Kentucky and Indiana and Michigan. Huh. Now, I wonder what is different between Maryland and those four states. Could it be that those four states voted for Donald Trump last year, not Kamala Harris? And how many of those folks, by the way, who lost their homes in Maryland actually did vote for Donald Trump, but they are still being told that Trump will not send them any federal help because the state, well, the state voted for Harris. As the Washington Post observes, Trump has in the past threatened to deny disaster relief to his political adversaries, including in Democratic-run states like California out here, which requested aid for devastating wildfires. Recent relief, however, went to states that were run by governors of both parties, but all of the states who were approved, what do you know? They all voted for Donald Trump in 2024. So even if the governors are Democrats, that's okay. We'll still give y'all money as long as you voted for me. Last month, Maryland's congressional delegation, including the state's only Republican, Congressman Andy Harris, who chairs the far-right House Freedom Caucus, he wrote a letter to the president asking him to authorize FEMA funds to help repair the flood damage. After Trump denied the request, Senators Chris Van Hollen and Angela Also Brooks, both of them Democrats, and Congresswoman April McLean Delaney, they made a joint statement urging Trump to reconsider providing aid to the two counties, which lean heavily Republican. So these are heavily Republican counties with a lot of Trump voters in them, and he's still saying, nope, not going to help you because the state voted for Democrats last year.
What did you call him? Petty tyrant?
Yep. I think maybe I said small petty tyrant. Let's make sure we get that correct. Quote, Marylanders in Allegheny and Garrett counties were hit hard by May's historically intense storms, the three Democratic federal lawmakers said in a statement. 2 months after flash flooding tore through these communities, they are still in need of support to repair public schools and libraries that were inundated, roads and bridges that were washed out, and homes and businesses that were left severely damaged. In a statement shared with the Washington Post, the White House emphasized the responsibility of local and state governments to help pay for damages following natural disasters, even though one day earlier, the Trump administration approved disaster relief funding for four states that voted for him. Quote, the president responds to each request for federal assistance with great care and consideration, ensuring American tax dollars are used appropriately and efficiently by the states to supplement their obligation to respond to and recover from disasters, said White House spokesperson Abigail Jackson in an email to the Post. And that's not all the punishment that Maryland has received for daring to vote against Donald Trump last year. Last month alone, the state lost 3,500 federal jobs, making the largest single-month drop in that job sector in nearly three decades. This month, Trump also reneged on a plan to move the FBI building, the FBI headquarters, to Maryland. Instead, he says he will now move it to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center, which is in D.C., punishing Maryland once again. Maryland, of course, can formally appeal the decision with FEMA within 30 days. Governor Moore has said he intends to do so, but I hope The governor is not holding his breath. All right. Let's take a break here. We will come back with more on our petty little tyrant and his political woes as the rising waters of his own making regarding his longtime pal Jeffrey Epstein continue to rise and perhaps, hopefully, someday soon, swamp both him and his presidency. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Back, it's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Dirty secrets indeed. All right, I raised this point with Digby and Driftglass on yesterday's Bradcast. During our conversation about Trump's huge Jeffrey Epstein problems, but it has been kind of astounding, I gotta say, for me to watch over the past couple of weeks, as it feels like a light has suddenly switched on, if that's the right way to describe it, among many of Trump's MAGA supporters, or at least some of them who are like, hey, wait a second. Trump is now blocking the release of the Epstein files. Does that mean that Donald Trump himself might be implicated in those files as one of the pedophiles that Epstein had been protecting or blackmailing or whatever? Or suddenly this suddenly occurs to them? I mean, the idea that MAGA... seemingly, did they had no clue, really, until now, when you got photos of Epstein and Trump ubiquitous for years? Did they really not see those videos, photos, perhaps more than photos of Epstein with Trump than anyone else? And yet these guys thought that Trump was going to be the one to expose all of the people in Epstein's dirty world by releasing the FBI and DOJ investigative documents and evidence, etc. Really? Is that what these people thought? It never occurred to them that if there was a so-called Epstein client list, that Donald Trump was likely at the very top of that list? I mean, it's been known for years that they were the very best of friends for years. I mean, back in 2002, more than 20 years ago, in New York Magazine's profile of Jeffrey Epstein, they quote Trump as saying, quote, I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life. I mean, that's not a new revelation. It has been around forever, and yet they thought this was going to be the guy to expose all of this?
Well, MAGA World has a really well-documented resistance to reality. They are in their hermetically sealed environment, which, you know, facts do not penetrate.
It's difficult to believe that they did not know about it. I mean, it has been sitting right there this whole time.
They didn't want to see it. It creates cognitive dissonance for them. They can't handle it.
So they're in that much denial? Is that what it is?
That's what it seems to me.
Digby reminded us on yesterday's show, you know, don't forget, these people are in a cult.
True.
So as Driftglass noted, they can be programmed to believe, to know, to not believe, to not know anything that their leader wants them to, I guess. But I guess that programming has a few flaws, a few bugs in it. It seems that after years of promises to release the so-called Epstein files, when he wanted to become president again, a revenge president, when the clock ran out and it was time to finally release some of those files as president, and he balked and blocked their release, well, it seems like something has sort of clicked in at least some of them. So really, my bad for not seeing that moment coming sooner. I do see, by the way, a similar moment coming down the road after Trump has of late been pretending that Barack Obama has been caught red-handed, or as he told Republicans in the White House this week, caught cold, hard, and blue, whatever that means, committing the worst case of treason, quote, treason, in the country, in the history of the country, and trying to steal the 2016 election, the one, by the way, that Trump won, a treasonous coup that those MAGA folks who may still be duped enough to believe anything from this clod, well, they're going to be similarly disappointed, I suspect, when Barack Obama is not actually arrested and frog-marched into jail and then executed, because, by the way, that is the punishment for treason. And when those arrests don't happen, I wonder if they're also going to go, hey, wait a minute. I thought, will the scales fall from their eyes when that doesn't happen? When nobody is actually convicted of trying to steal the 2016 election with a coup? At least no Democrats. But because I'm sort of late to sort of see this whole Epstein thing coming, as far as I know, you know, now that it's becoming Trump's Hurricane Katrina, as we also discussed on yesterday's broadcast, the moment when as Driftglass described it, the underpinning lie sort of collapses, not unlike when the underpinning lie of the George Bush years that he would keep us safe also came crashing down when thousands died in Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. While the federal government did nothing to prevent it or to save those people, and W's approval numbers never recovered, and they were higher than they are for Donald Trump right now. So because I've been somewhat late to this story, I'm not even sure if this clip from the 2010 video deposition of Jeffrey Epstein has long been in circulation or not, and I just hadn't seen it. But I just saw it for the first time last night. And if I only heard it for the first time last night, I suspect there's a whole lot of MAGA folks out there who have similarly never heard this at all. So let's help them, shall we? This is Jeffrey Epstein being deposed on videotape in on March 17 of 2010, as apparently resurfaced once again this week by ABC News.
Have you ever had a personal relationship with Donald Trump?
What do you mean by personal relationships?
Have you socialized with him?
Yes, sir.
Yes?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever socialized with Donald Trump in the presence of females under the age of 18?
Though I'd like to answer that question, at least today, I'm going to have to assert my 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendment rights, sir.
So if you couldn't hear that there, yes, he had. That was Jeffrey Epstein answering questions, saying yes, he had socialized with Donald Trump. Had he socialized with Donald Trump along with girls who were less than 18 years of age? He says, though I'd like to answer that question today, I'm going to assert my Fifth Amendment and other rights to not answer that question after thinking about it for a few endless seconds there.
Yeah.
Now, that's from 15 years ago. Did MAGA have any clue about that before the past week or so when they've decided, hey, wait a minute, Donald Trump may be on that list? Epstein died in jail during the first Trump administration, supposedly from suicide. Epstein's sidekick, Ghislaine Maxwell, who was convicted of helping him recruit and groom underage middle school and high school girls, she's still alive, and she is serving 20 years related to those crimes in a prison down in Florida, as many of Epstein's crimes took place in both New York and Palm Beach, where both Trump and Jeffrey Epstein just happened to have homes. And now, Rather than release the files as long promised, Donald Trump has dispatched his former personal criminal defense attorney, who he has appointed as the second in command at the Department of Justice, to go down to Florida and talk to Maxwell to see what, if anything, she has to tell them about the case that is not already known, or something. I cannot see any reason why they would want to do that unless they want to hand deliver a message to Maxwell to keep her mouth shut. And who knows, maybe someday there will be a pardon in it for her. I mean, frankly, what else would they learn from her? Do you really believe, MAGA, that Donald Trump's personal criminal defense lawyer, now second in command at the DOJ, is going to come back and say, well, we talked to Ghislaine Maxwell, and she told us that Donald Trump was having sex with underage girls for years at Epstein's place? Of course not. This is a part of their attempted cover-up at this point, but it is one facet of that cover-up that, like so many other attempts at covering up and distracting, is wildly unlikely to work, and far more likely to make things still worse for Donald Trump. That, of course, is just fine by me. He is welcome to keep digging his own grave. Need a hand with that shovel, Mr. President? As Washington Post reported on Wednesday night, President Donald Trump was struggling to contain the fallout from his administration's decisions not to release the Epstein files. As a Republican-controlled House subcommittee for the first time voted to subpoena the administration for the files, and a Florida court declined to release grand jury testimony from the case, three House Republicans supported a measure introduced by Democratic Congresswoman Summer Lee of Pennsylvania to demand the Justice Department release the files. Now, under House rules, the full House Oversight Committee, led by Congressman James Comer of Kentucky, a huge MAGA Trump ally, well, he must now issue those subpoenas. They note the cracks, the Post notes, the cracks starting to emerge in the GOP coalition signaled the firestorm over Epstein has far from abated and may intensify as Republicans hear from voters at home during their five-week August recess. After a unanimous vote on Tuesday, Chairman Comer also issued a subpoena for Epstein's former girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, for her testimony next month in Florida. But again, what is she going to tell them? Trump was right in the middle of this? Of course not. She wants a pardon. She's not going to tell them that. Will she tell them Trump had nothing to do with it? Sure, maybe. But at this point, who will believe her? She wants a pardon. The furor behind all of this may be further fanned by the new report on Wednesday night in the Wall Street Journal, describing how Attorney General Pam Bondi and her deputy informed the president way back in May that, yes, his name appeared, quote, multiple times in the files. Well, go figure. Who could have guessed it? Who could have known? Last week, Trump, when asked directly by a reporter outside the White House if the attorney general had in fact told him that, he is in the files, he, of course, lied about it.
What did she tell you about the review? And specifically, did she tell you at all that your name appeared in the file?
No. She's given us just a very quick briefing.
Did she tell you that your name appeared? No, nothing like that. We just talked for 5 seconds and then moved on to other things. Well, it's not just the Wall Street Journal that is reporting it. Apparently, the New York Times has confirmed that as well, that Donald Trump was told way back in May that he appears all over the Epstein files multiple times. Asked if the meeting reported by the journal took place, White House spokesperson Stephen Chung also lied, saying, quote, this is nothing more than a continuation of the fake news stories concocted by the Democrats and the liberal media. That liberal media, I guess, would be Rupert Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal, which first broke the news on Wednesday that Trump was told by his own attorney general back in May that, yes, he appears throughout the Epstein files. That liberal media? Really? The Wednesday action in the House Oversight Subcommittee on Federal Law Enforcement to issue those subpoenas was supported by three hard right MAGA Republicans, Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina, Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, and Brian Jack of Georgia. Moreover, at least 10 Republican House lawmakers have now signed a bipartisan petition to circumvent House leadership, work around Mike Johnson, and send a measure directly to the floor via a so-called discharge petition to release the files. But they won't be able to do so now until September, after Mike Johnson adjourned early for summer break in order to avoid any more Epstein votes, if possible, because it was kept coming up in committee after committee after committee. And he said, oh, you know what? Let's go home. I'm sure everything will be fine by September. We'll all be talking about something else entirely.
Well, maybe all of their constituents will be showing up to their town halls and their county fairs and state fairs to ask them questions.
Those will be fun. All of that, by the way, after Johnson just last week said that he was all for transparency and that they absolutely should put out the files there because he trusted the American people to see them and to understand them for what they were, that they should absolutely be put out. That was last week. This week, everybody go home. Guess he got a talking to from someone about that last week. Congressman Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky, he's leading the effort for this discharge petition along with progressive Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna of California. Massie said he expected the backlash to the administration's refusal to release the files to, quote, grow over the August recess. I imagine that may be the case. But Congressman Byron Donalds, the MAGA denialist from Florida, he cast doubt on the Wall Street Journal reporting entirely on the idea that Trump's name appeared multiple times in the Epstein files, suggesting that the Biden administration would certainly have released the Epstein documents to incriminate Donald Trump if the president was actually named in them. That is something, by the way, that I've heard from other MAGA denialists on this. They're not worried about it at all, because if he was actually in there, why, Joe Biden would have released that long ago. Donalds told the Washington Post, quote, so if he was on that list, you mean to tell me the DOJ wouldn't have put it out under Biden? Nobody buys that, he said. Well, have you heard of something called the Federal Privacy Act, Congressman? In fact, it would have been unlawful for the Biden administration to release those files, which include names of both victims and many people who have not been charged with crimes. It's a violation of law to have done that. But you know what? Guess what? Congress has the ability to change that law if they want. They could do it tomorrow if they weren't all at home, sent home by Mike Johnson. They could vote for an exception to the Federal Privacy Act that would allow specifically the release of the Epstein files in full if they wanted to. And if they are so sure that Donald Trump doesn't appear, nothing incriminating, nothing to worry about, it will really, you know, only show Democrats like Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton as being involved somehow in these insidious crimes. Well, go ahead, Mr. Donalds. Why don't you file a bill that would change that law, make an exception to the Federal Privacy Act to release the files in full? Because then, if Donald Trump signed that bill, I will hold for the laughter here. Well, then Trump could lawfully keep his promise to his voters and release the Epstein files. But no, the Biden administration didn't do it because the Biden administration tended to, you know, respect the rule of law. They didn't just say they were in favor of the rule of law. They actually respected it. They did not weaponize the Department of Justice, unlike this administration actually has. So because the Biden believed in the rule of law, of course, they didn't release that information willy-nilly just because they thought it would hurt Donald Trump if he was not being indicted for a related crime. That would be a violation of federal law, sir. Back to the Washington Post here. Trump had directed Bondi to ask the courts to unseal grand jury testimony, which, I must note, has absolutely nothing to do with Trump's involvement in the case. And Trump knows that, which is why he asked Bondi to go ask the courts to unseal that grand jury testimony, even though, as both he and Bondi know, the courts will not be able to do that because it violates judicial branch rules regarding grand jury secrecy and privacy testimony. On Wednesday, a Florida judge, in fact, denied the Justice Department's request to unseal testimony from the investigation there into Epstein's activities between 2005 and 2007, where he was eventually convicted, but he got a sweetheart deal where he only had to be in jail for about a month and he could leave for something like 16 hours a day to go to work. But no, the Florida judge said no, citing secrecy rules. We can't just release grand jury information willy-nilly. The Justice Department is separately pursuing the release of grand jury testimony from New York, where Epstein was charged with sex trafficking years later in 2019, after all of this had come out, after we had learned that Donald Trump's own Secretary of Labor, Acosta, had been a U.S. attorney down in Florida at the time that gave Jeffrey Epstein that sweetheart deal. And then Donald Trump hired him for his administration. Maybe just a way to say thanks. And New York was also where Maxwell was convicted in 2021. So that is also unlikely to result in the release of grand jury testimony, which, again, probably has nothing to do with Donald Trump. So all of that is for show, and you need to know that, period. Just like the subpoenas the Trump criminal defense attorney interviewing Ghislaine Maxwell. Do not be hoodwinked by any of this. All of that is for show.
It's for a diversion. Quick, create a diversion.
The only thing that really matters is if they're able to release that information. And again, there are serious concerns about releasing that information because it undoubtedly includes a lot of innocent names in it, probably including Donald Trump. But, you know, if Donald Trump wanted to be the big man, he could just simply say, well, we need to redact all the names of the victims and we need to redact the names of everybody else. But you can go ahead and release my name if it happens to be in there, which, of course, we know it isn't. Byron Donald said that, you know, it would have been released by Joe Biden had it been in there. So just release the files with everybody's name redacted other than Donald Trump's. That will prove it. Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, in response to all of this, said the Trump administration and Republicans, quote, have delivered nothing more than a government of the billionaires, by the billionaires, and for the billionaires. So it's reasonable to conclude that Republicans are continuing to protect the lifestyles of the rich and shameless, even if that includes pedophiles. Speaker Mike Johnson said, quote, the way Democrats have tried to weaponize this issue is absolutely shameless. And again, we'll pause for the laughter out there. He said, I just want to say this, Democrats said nothing and did nothing, absolutely nothing, about bringing transparency for the entire 4 years of the Biden presidency. Which, again, Mr. Speaker, see the Federal Privacy Act that I mentioned a minute or two ago, and the fact that, unlike Donald Trump and Republicans, Democrats did not run for office on a promise to release the Epstein files. That was your people, Mike. Including then-Senator, now-Vice President J.D. Vance, who, just a friendly reminder here, he tweeted back in September of 2021, quote, remember when we learned that our wealthiest and most powerful people were connected to a guy who ran a literal sex trafficking ring and then that guy died mysteriously in a jail, and now we just don't talk about it, he wrote. Yeah, I remember that, JD. In December of that same year, Vance reposted another user's comments, which said, quote, "The DOJ and Ghislaine Maxwell's lawyers have made a deal that her little black book of contacts will never be made public." And then J.D. Vance added his own comment to that tweet saying, quote, "If you're a journalist and you're not asking questions about this case, you should be ashamed of yourself. What purpose do you even serve? Maybe try to do your job once in a while." Well, I'm trying, J.D. Thanks for the advice. And you're welcome. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman, not ashamed at all, and this is the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. All right, another too tightly packed show, so let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
It's seen as a turning point for climate justice.
A healthy environment is a human right, UN World Court says in landmark ruling. Trump administration working overtime to make America polluted again. Plus,
countries that cling to fossil fuels are not protecting their economies. They are sabotaging them.
UN analysis finds booming clean renewable energy has hit a global tipping point.
Fossil fools indeed. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
All over the country, temperatures hit triple digits. In Nevada and California, officials put out heat warnings for the towns of Pahrump and Furnace Creek. As in, I'm sweating so hard, the crack of my Pahrump turned into Furnace Creek.
He will be missed. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, very, very big news out of the World Court this week. Not that it got the attention that it deserves.
No, it never does. But in a landmark climate ruling this week, the UN's highest court, the International Court of Justice, said that countries across the globe must address, quote, the urgent and existential threat of climate change or potentially face legal repercussions. The court ruled that, quote, a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment is a human right, and that countries have a duty and obligation to limit planet warming. Greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change.
Imagine that.
Countries could potentially be sued over failure to take action. The opinion by the World Court is non-binding, but it supports vulnerable states in international climate negotiations and is expected to give leverage to those trying to hold high-polluting nations and industries legally accountable, including, potentially, reparations from wealthy countries that are primarily responsible for the climate crisis.
Good.
The landmark ruling by the World Court follows on the heels of a new study finding that climate-intensified extreme weather has driven up food prices around the globe and that climate-induced food price shocks are increasing in frequency. The researchers warn that food price shocks are likely to lead to more malnutrition, political upheaval, and social unrest, particularly in the world's poorest and most volatile regions. Mm. But here in the U.S., the Trump administration is expanding fossil fuels and hamstringing U.S. clean energy industries.
Yay!
The Trump Interior Department has added new layers of political bureaucracy to block wind and solar projects, requiring them to get Interior Secretary Doug Burgum's personal sign-off to obtain permits on public lands. Mm. The new hurdles apply only to renewable energy, not fossil fuel projects.
Oh, really?
The Trump EPA EPA announced that it is eliminating its independent scientific research division that provided landmark data on the risks of smog, hazardous chemicals, climate change, water pollutants, and more. The move fulfills a key goal of the chemical industry. Hundreds of chemists, biologists, toxicologists, and other scientists will be fired.
Well, who needs all those scientists at the Environmental Protection Agency?
And the EPA also delayed required cleanups of toxic coal ash landfills that contaminate groundwater.
Which part of protection do you not understand, Mr. President?
And the Trump White House granted a 2-year exemption for coal-fired power plants, chemical manufacturers, and other polluting facilities to bypass new Biden-era upgraded pollution standards. Finally, some better news.
Good.
Two new United Nations reports this week find that the global transition to renewable energy has hit a tipping point, with solar and wind power now cheaper than fossil fuels in most countries and growing fast. In 2024, renewables made up more than 90% of new electricity generation capacity added to the grid worldwide. In several developed countries, electric vehicle sales are approaching 50% of all car sales.
Really?
Just not in the United States. A second analysis found that onshore wind, solar, and new hydropower are now the cheapest electricity sources globally, between 40 to 50% cheaper than the lowest cost fossil fuel. Renewables are booming despite the fossil fuel industry receiving 9 times the amount of government subsidies that renewables receive globally. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres highlighted the global clean energy tipping point, but warned it is still not happening fast enough.
The fossil fuel age is flailing and failing. We are in the dawn of a new energy era. We have the tools to power the future for humanity. Let's make the most of them.
And yet, we're doing away with pollution rules and giving tax breaks to dirty fossil fuel companies instead. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Thank you very much, Desiree.
Yeah.
Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download them anytime for free at bradblog.com. That is thanks to those of you who hit the donate button while you're over there. Or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. You can find Desi Doyen on the social medias also at
Green News Report.
We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.